I've come from deepest New Jersey. I'm pleased to meet with an audience that represents our co-belligerent in this war. I think that there are not only issues of international legality, there are issues of domestic politics, constitutional issues that should concern both members of the coalition of two, all right, of which we are both a part. My first point would be is that the whole topic here would probably be seen in a way as a sideline issue in Washington today. There are two slogans, I think, that sort of embody the revolution in diplomatic affairs that the dominant faction in Washington is trying to realize. The first of the slogans was Iraq first, then France. The second of the slogan was Iraq first, then Turtles Bay. And for those of you who do not know the geography of Manhattan, Turtles Bay is where the UN General Headquarters are located. So what we see here is, I think especially at this moment where everyone is trying to cover up the rift and talk about reconciliation in Evian and in St. Petersburg, what we see here is an attempt by the sovereignty wing, I guess, of the American conservative movement to try and emancipate the United States and its power from what it sees as the chains and obstacles created by the international institutions that were set up in the wake of World War II, set up by us, but that now we seek to free ourselves from. This is a dominant view in Washington, but I think a minority view in the country, and perhaps even a minority view in the U.S. government. It's worth pointing out that we call American governments administrations because they're not the whole government. And for anyone who pays attention, you can notice the American discourse is frequently schizophrenic on this. We have a kind of bipolar syndrome, with Powell saying one thing one day and Rummy saying something else the other. The person we have to pay attention to, of course, is Rumsfeld, I think. But it does show that there is a good deal of resistance. I read an article in the LA Times where one senior American diplomat was trying to explain to himself what was going on, and he says, well, when I wake up in the morning and I try and understand what's happened, I just simply tell myself there's been a military coup. Now, I don't think there's been a military coup, but I do think that the revolution in diplomatic affairs reflects the fact that there's been a struggle for domestic power in the United States and a kind of ongoing political crisis about how American democracy is going to handle the issue of war powers. And there have been a series, I think, of attempts to resolve this conflict through a set of coup de force. I won't call them coup d'etat, I'll call them coup de force. Beginning in 94 with a contract, for America, sometimes called the Contract on America, to Newt Gingrich, the Clinton impeachment campaign, our very peculiar election in 2000, where the losing candidate won, and then the whole series of events that have followed in the wake of September 11th. What these gentlemen in power in Washington have learned is that coup de force work. They worked in American politics, and now I think increasingly they're learning that they work in international politics. And that's the issue that should concern us. What is really happening in the United States? What is its relationship not only to international law, but what is its relationship to Europe and its European allies, including you? In what sense are we part of a common community anymore? Blair says that we are a part of a unipolar community because of shared values. Well, I'm not sure that's true anymore. I think that under ordinary circumstances, or let's say under the circumstances of American politics over the last 25 years, we would be in the midst of another American constitutional crisis. It wouldn't be a crisis over issues of international legality. It would be a crisis about how the way issues of international legality were used to distort the internal decision-making process in the United States. And I'll give you three examples, and then I'll be quiet. If we go back to the first Gulf War, the way that war was voted was that we got a UN Security Council resolution first, and then Daddy Bush, backed up by the UN Security Council, managed to get a War Powers Authorization Act through the U.S. Senate by a 49-51 majority because he had the backing of the international community. Son George does the same thing last fall, but asks for the War Powers Authorization before he goes to the Security Council. And the leadership of the Democratic Party abdicates its constitutional responsibilities because it feels that it cannot deprive the Bush administration of its opportunity to get the UN Security Council backing that will allow it to avoid war. We have been confronted, I think, for the last 6 months by really a kind of grassroots revolt of the base in the Democratic Party, not only against the Bush administration, but also against the abdication of congressional leadership. That's reflected in the City for Peace resolutions that led to 150 cities across basically both coasts and the northern tier of the United States, essentially, but even places like Atlanta, Georgia, voting anti-war resolutions, just as they are now voting resolutions against any cooperation with the Justice Department in the application of the Patriot Act. There is a kind of grassroots rebellion. I think that there is now a press scandal in the making. And if we'd been playing by the rules of 20 years ago or even 15 years ago, we'd be well on our way to Son of Contragate. And given that a lot of the same people are involved in both affairs, that comes as no surprise. I'm not so sure that's going to happen this time. I think that the process will be probably shut down. But in the United States, the issue is not so much international law, but the way in which international law has been used to diddle the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you very much.